Welcome to the Kathy Covington Podcast, where science meets soul and strength finds meaning. I'm Kathy, and I created this podcast as a space for women who want more than just a workout. This is a place for total body health, from cellular science to spiritual alignment, from functional nutrition to emotional resilience. Here, we blend real research with real stories, honest conversations about healing, growth, and the messy, beautiful process of becoming fully embodied. You'll hear from experts, practitioners, and women just like you, each with a piece of the puzzle to help you live a stronger, clearer, happier, healthier, and more connected life. So if you're ready to go beyond the surface and into the deep, deep, nourishing work of becoming whole, you're in the right place.
Science meets soul, strength finds meaning. Welcome to Embodied. I'm Kathy Covington. This podcast lives at the intersection of science and soul. Each week, we go deep into the topics that matter most for women who want to age powerfully: longevity, hormonal health, movement, and mindset, and the kind of biohacking conversation that honestly used to live only in the men's locker rooms. We're changing that. This is unfiltered, curious, and always grounded in the real. I'm the founder of Mantra Pilates Studios and the Mantra Method, and at my core, I'm a community builder. That's always been the thing, creating spaces where women come together, do the hard work, and refuse to do it alone. Today, I lead Mantra as CEO, driving the vision, the brand, and the mission that sits underneath everything that we build. And today's conversation, I've been looking forward to this one for a while. My guest is Mark Wooster, and I want you to stay with me for just a moment as I tell you who he is, because his story matters. Mark is a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, a registered nurse with a Bachelor of Science in Nursing, a former CEO who built a technology company into the Inc. 500 list not once, twice. He's a certified yoga instructor, a CrossFit coach, and one of the first cohort of professionals to complete a Master of Science in Medical Cannabis Science and Therapeutics. He's a breathwork facilitator and a psychedelic healthcare professional, and he founded NurseMark, a global community for people committed to what he calls powerful living. Now he guides some of the highest performing leaders in the world into peak states, using nothing but their own breath. No prescriptions, no retreat, no guru required. And what draws me to Mark is that he has lived the full arc. He knows what it is to build an extraordinary life from the outside in, and he knows the exact moment that stopped being enough. His work was right at the intersection of where I live, the body, the nervous system, and the deeper truth that sits underneath all of the achievement. Today, we're talking about breath. Not the five-minute app exercise, not box breathing before a stressful meeting. We're talking about breath as a portal to peak states, to what's been stored in the body, to the parts of yourself that strategy and willpower, no matter how much you have, simply cannot reach. If you've done the therapy and read the books and you understand your patterns and something still feels just slightly out of reach, this conversation is for you. Come back to yourself. We're starting right now. Hi, Mark, and thank you for being here today.
Oh, Kathy, thank you so much. Thanks for the beautiful introduction and for the invitation to join you. I'm so excited to have this conversation.
Amazing. And I would love to start out with, if you could just tell us a little bit more about you, Mark, and how you got into this work.
Okay. So, you know, you listed a lot of things about who I am, but is that really the case? Is that really who I am? You know, we take on all of these masks and these roles. And what I've come to find out through all of these journeys and explorations is that I'm all of those and I'm none of those. Right. And yeah, my journey's been wild and rocky and fun and incredible, from entrepreneur to healthcare. And, you know, there was a steady theme through it all, underlying all of that, all that achievement and all of those things. And that was that I had a hidden vow, a program that was instilled in my first 7 years, probably before the age of five, and it was that I'm unlovable. And that was the program, unseen to me, that drove all of the success. So all of those things that I needed to achieve was because I needed to be impressive. I needed to impress you in order for you to love me. I had to earn your love. And that ran my life. I mean, it ran my life. All of the things that I did, I had to be the best at, because I couldn't be less than the best, because then, of course, you wouldn't love me. You'd find out the truth. But there's so much that goes, wow, that goes into that vow and how it manifested in my life. And that's just one of many. So, you know, what I do today, you know, in the New Mysteries, that's the name of the organization, the community, is that I work in the realm of that first 7 years of life, because if we can reset that those vows, if we can recognize them and work with them, everything in your life will change. Everything. Yeah. In a beautiful way.
That's so interesting that you say the first 7 years of your life. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the importance of that.
Oh, well, you know, we come into this world, we already have programming on board. We already have this set of instructions, right? We inherit stuff from previous generations. We know that now, that we inherit experiences that they had, that as a species, it was deemed, nature deemed this important enough to hand it down to you. Like, you know, for instance, if someone who's super successful has so much money that they couldn't possibly spend it all, yet is still one of their number one fears is running out of money, that's not theirs. That's previous generations that they inherited, the generations that struggled, that created this, right? That made that drive that they were successful in achieving. But in that first 7 years, we're in a theta brainwave state. We are in a state of hypnosis. So everything that we experience is just absorbed. It's not analyzed. It's just absorbed, and we make vows, decisions based on the experience. And there's no analysis to it. Like, it's just put in. And so, you know, people could have a traumatic childhood. They could have a good childhood. Still, it's programming, because for that first 7 years, you receive all that information, thousands of cues, thousands of trainings, right? Don't walk into the street. Don't put your hand on a stove, you know, or whatever the programming needs to be. And it's different for everybody, right? Because your family had a set of instructions. Another family had a set of instructions. This culture had a set of instructions. And it's all different, but we receive this programming. And then from that, our lives are built. We spend the rest of our lives just going through life, either, you know, making sure that vow is true or not. And that's just the process that we go through. And we don't even know it. It's unseen.
So that's our first 7 years. And then what happens after that? Move me into
You know, our brains are beautiful. You know, we develop that ego that creates the world that we live in. And it does it by dipping into all our experiences, you know, and it starts 7, 8, 9 years old, that concrete thinking. That ego develops, and it compares the past experiences to what is about to happen or what is going to happen in the future. So it's like a prediction machine. So it just uses those vows and those experiences to say, safe, not safe. Doesn't care what the circumstance is. Doesn't care if you're happy or sad. That's not the job. The job is safe, unsafe. And so if you have a vow that's unlovable, you're going to look for justification that you're unlovable, or vice versa. You'll look for experiences that say you are lovable. It depends, right? So a vow like mine, which was that I'm unlovable, produced a result of being pretty successful in the world. So that's a positive result from a negative. But in relationship, I always had to find somebody who would justify that vow, that would make that vow, yeah, that they would justify it, right? So it would be, I would always pick someone who was fundamentally incapable of being in a relationship, somebody that would ultimately you know, let me down, not be able to love me, because that would validate that I'm unlovable. So I'd always find that kind of a relationship. Until I got rid of that, until I was able to see it and work with it and go through the process of extricating myself from that, I was going to be doomed to being in a relationship with those people who are unable to really love because of the experiences that they had in the hidden vows, right? You follow me?
Yeah. I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me because I think what I'm hearing you say is they're patterns that you had since childhood that you were able to recognize at some point.
Everybody's got them. Everybody has them. And the beauty is once you start down this path and you start to do the work, number one, you let yourself off the hook. You're off the hook. Like you understand that your behavior, your responses were not choice. They were driven by these unseen vows or programs that I received. And it's the same for everybody. So then all of a sudden, my parents are off the hook. They weren't terrible parents. They were great parents. They were amazing. They did the best they could based on what they got from their parents. Yeah. Everybody's off the hook. And so then you start to live in a world of understanding that people's behaviors are not personal to you. Like, people don't treat me badly. They just treat me the way that they're programmed to treat people, right? In whatever particular circumstance. And now all of a sudden, it's not about me anymore. I'm outside of being the victim, right? Before it was like, oh my God, you know, three times suicidal, always at the end of a relationship, in a relationship that I was madly in love with the person I was with, but they were constitutionally incapable of being in a loving relationship because of their programming, their vows. Yeah.
And then you being attracted to that because of your programming.
Yes. So over and over and over again.
The patterns continue.
You know, until you get past that, until you recognize what's in play, it's going to be a continual pattern. Yeah.
So when you're talking about youth, when up to the age of 7, you said the brain, you're talking about a theta wave pattern, brainwave pattern. Explain that a little bit more, because I'm always really interested in the science and what's going on.
Bruce Lipton has done a lot with this, you know, that this concept that in the first 6-7 years that you're in this theta brainwave state, right? It's the state of hypnosis. It's why when someone gets hypnotized, the hypnotist is able to give them a suggestion. It's because there's no analysis by this beautiful prefrontal cortex. It's been bypassed and it just goes in. So when you have those experiences, you're in that hypnotic state in that early childhood period, the memories are stored as implicit memories. In other words, it's in the felt, in the emotional felt body, right? The part of the brain, the amygdala and the limbic system, that implicit memory is stored there versus the explicit memory, which comes online. I don't know, when's your first memory that you can recall? That's explicit memory. I remember being on a lake when I was 3 years old and it was a sunny day. Blah, blah, blah. It's time-based. It's event-based. That's explicit memory. Implicit is that felt emotion, that feeling. If you hear a song on the radio and all of a sudden it brings you back to being in a relationship with this certain person 20 years ago, that was the song that was there and you feel that emotion, that's that implicit memory being activated. So you can't talk your way out of it, right? So I've had the most amazing therapists over the years. There's one of the manifestations of the programming, I'm unlovable, and some of the other ones, not worthy, and et cetera. It produced treatment-resistant depression for me. So even though I had great success, I struggled. I had depression. I had suicidality 3 times, you know? And I had great therapists, amazing. They were just at the top of their game. And we moved the needle just a little bit. I could recognize that my father was angry when I was a child. He was going through his own stuff and he was angry at that time. I can talk about it. I can say it. but I can't get to what the program was or the vow that was installed from that experience of my father at that time. So breath work and these other tools are the mechanism, the tool that gets you into that implicit memory, gets you into that subconscious mind, that body experience, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess most people probably have heard the word breath work, what you're talking about, but really have no idea what it actually means. So maybe in the simplest terms possible, if you can explain what it is.
Oh my gosh. How do you explain breath work? I mean, breathing in and of itself, you know, we do it 20,000 times a day without even thinking about it. It's one of those automated processes and we just go about our day and it's what sustains us from the start to the finish. You take your first breath and you're an individual cut off from your mother. That's when you begin your life. And then you take your last breath and you're out. You're on to your next adventure. In between, you breathe so many times a day. Breath work is the conscious manipulation of either the rate or the depth of your breathing. So by manipulating that, you can enter different states, right? In the yogic tradition, they have pranayama, right? They have different breathing practices to help you get into more of a meditative state. And so these breath work has been practiced, I guess, since the beginning of time. Really, it's just been something that has been used to change your state. Yeah.
Interesting. And can you explain more about what's actually happening inside the body physically and chemically when we do?
Yeah, it depends on the practice that you're using. A simple practice of vagal breathing, you know, box breathing you mentioned, you know, one type of breath is really super powerful in regard to the vagus nerve, which is the nerve that connects all of your gut, that gut brain to the brain that resides here. There's two brains in your body or maybe more, but that vagus nerve, right? So when you think about—
How many brains did you say we have?
We have at least two. I mean, we have the gut brain. When somebody says, trust your gut, that is for sure— Absolutely true, because that's another brain that you have and probably one that's more powerful than the one you have here. This one's just all looking at past experiences and predicting the future. This one's taking in all of the cues, like all of the cues around you. It takes in all of those. And so when you have a gut feeling, trust it. It's true. It's your brain, the one here, is giving you very good advice. So anyway, we have the vagus nerve. And so if we think about the two states of our nervous system response, we have sympathetic, which is fight or flight, right? It's been very important in keeping us alive. You're in a dangerous situation. You're either going to fight your way out or you're going to flee, or maybe you freeze. That's part of the other part of the response. That's the sympathetic, right? And so it has physiological results in the body. Cortisol is released. Adrenaline is released. You're ready to go. Your breathing changes. Your blood flow changes so that you're in this state of being ready to flee. So that's sympathetic. Then you have parasympathetic, known as rest and digest. That's the one where you just, everything's good. When there's no danger here, I'm just going to relax and have something to eat. I'm going to relax. So by using the breath very easily, you can shift from that sympathetic response into a parasympathetic, which is super great for you as you roll through your world. If, again, you mentioned doing box breathing before you go into a meeting. If you use this breath, if you use that breath, you're invoking that parasympathetic response. You can create that response. So when you walk into the meeting, you're present in the meeting. Your blood flow to your brain is maximized. You're in this rest and digest. So it's really about state change when you're talking about basic breath work. Again, box breathing, 4-7-8 breath. There's so many different ones. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me as well, being in the Pilates space, and breath is a big part of what we're doing when we're exercising and the importance of it in the workout too. And
absolutely,
it's something that I'm always emphasizing, how important it is to breathe during these exercises. Not only are we bringing oxygen into the blood for enhancement, the workout enhancement, but it's also the state of mind that is, I feel like our clients are getting from the breathing that they're doing while they're in these very difficult movements.
Absolutely. In all of the modalities that I've participated in, and I think I've certainly done Pilates. I was a yoga instructor for a couple of years, done CrossFit, as you mentioned. And in every one of those, breath is super important. Absolutely. Yeah.
So could you explain what is the difference between everyday breathing that we do unconsciously and then the kind of breathing that you teach? And what's the difference and why does it matter so much?
So being in the space that I'm in and doing the work that I do, trying to help people to access that base level programming and to really get outside of what I call the matrix, right? You know, I do a keynote speech called Red Pill, Blue Pill, and it's, you know, reference to the Matrix, the movie. And with
which one did you take?
I took the red pill, baby. I took the red pill so long ago. That's how I ended up here. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Let me guess.
Yeah. No blue pill for me. So the breath work that I utilize as a tool is based on Stanislav Grof, who was a very famous psychiatrist who in 1956, I think he had his first LSD experience, and he was very key in the psychedelic as a medicine in the psychiatric space. He was a psychiatrist. He was an MD. And from 56 to 70, he conducted thousands of LSD sessions with patients, with clients, and with great results. And he wrote several books, and he was just prolific. In 1970, when a corrupt politician, that drugs don't get regulated by science, by the way. Drugs get regulated by politics, which is scary as hell. It's never based on science. They outlawed LSD, right? So Stan and his wife, Christina, who were, I think, living at the Esalen Institute at that point in California.
I love Esalen.
I know, me too, right? There's a lot of great things have come from that place for decades and decades. And I believe they were living there. And so all of a sudden, he can't do the work that he's done. And he and his wife, Christina, at the time, figured out that if a person breathes in a certain way, a circular connected breath to a certain soundtrack curated with a very strong beat and very emotional music, no words, that if they did that for a period of time, they would have an altered reality experience, just like LSD. So their protocol is called holotropic breathwork. And it's a 3-hour experience, and it's intense in
3 hours?
3 hours. 3 hours of lying down, breathing, and any experience like that, a psychedelic experience, they defy explanation with words. They really do. I can tell you that they're magnificent, that some of my experiences of what will happen, but it will pale in comparison to your personal experience of it. So by breathing in this way for 3 hours, people have a profound altered reality experience that provides the same healing and opportunities for healing and expansion that taking LSD, the molecule, will. Yeah. So the breathwork that I teach is derived from that. It's an hour-long experience. And I use two sort of hour-long types of breathwork. The first is based on holotropic. So it's very strong curated soundtrack and cueing. And the other one's based on breathwork that's in the style of rebirthing. So rebirthing was a concept in the 70s. The 60s and 70s were amazing, by the way. So many things just popped up, right? In regard to consciousness expansion, healing the body rather than the mind. Rebirthing breath work was developed by a guy named Leonard Orr. And the hypothesis is that your time in the womb and your birth experience leave an imprint on you. And so they will affect your day-to-day life as you go through your life. And they'll manifest as things like, I've seen this really common one, and that is, if you were a late baby, like if you were past your due date for a pretty significant amount of time or just past it, the manifestation is that you're late to everything in your life. My sister is a perfect example. She was a late baby, my mother's last one.
I hope she's not here.
My sister is an hour late to everything ever. And so the family learns to manipulate that by saying, hey, by the way, Thanksgiving starts at 1. Now we know it starts at 2, maybe 3. We're just telling her it starts at 1 so that she'll actually be on time for the event. Right? But that's a manifestation. Another one would be if the cord was wrapped around your neck and you were a blue baby when you had that oxygen deprivation. You may roll through life not being able to withstand any pressure. As soon as the pressure's on and you're going to get close to maybe achieving something in your life, you'll feel constricted and you have to go. And so you go through life and you never really reach your maximum potential because everything in your life is strangulated. It's amazing. Anyway, rebirthing's another form of breath work that I utilize. Similar, not very loud, strong beat in the background. It's more me cueing through that hour, but it's an hour of circular connected breathing that elicits this response. Yeah.
That's incredible. So it's different than your regular holotropic breath work.
Yeah. It's not 3 hours in length.
Okay. So a regular session.
You're getting an experience in an hour.
That it's fascinating. I tried it for the first time. I was in New York at a business meeting type, and they had a breathwork facilitator come in, and I had no idea that it could be so powerful.
Yeah.
And when he guided, it was an hour long, and I went in kind of skeptical and thinking, oh, this isn't going to be, this can't work. Well, you know, I just didn't get it. And then by the end of that session, I had traveled. I was in paragliding. I was in these beautiful mountains. It was absolutely incredible. And it was moving too. It was very emotional. So I was in tears.
Well, that's what you're accessing. Accessing the limbic system, you know, the emotional center. Yeah. There's reasons, physiologically reasons why that happens.
Yeah. Maybe you could dive deeper into that. If you can kind of explain what is happening in the body and in the brain when you're leading somebody.
As far as we know what's going on, we like to think we know a lot of what's going on, and we do know a bit, but I mean, we're so complex. We're so amazing. These vessels that we get to inhabit for an experience, amazing. But basically what's happening is when you use that circular connected breathing and you do it for a period of time, you're blowing off all the carbon dioxide, right? Which is the acidic thing in your body. So you're getting rid of that. So you're creating respiratory alkalosis. You're creating this alkaline situation. And when that happens in the blood, there are a few things that occur. Number one, the blood flow to your prefrontal cortex and parts of the default mode network, which are the ones that are your ego, your thinking mind, your planning mind, that blood flow gets shunted. In other words, it gets decreased significantly by 50%, probably. I think it was the stat that I saw. And there's an increase in the blood flow to your limbic system, to the emotional center, right? To your feeling center. And so when that happens, the prefrontal cortex, your thinking mind, gets out of the way. And you said it was an hour. How long did it feel like when you came back? Did it feel like you were doing it for an hour?
No, it was not even. Maybe
A half hour, half of that, I would say.
Yeah.
20
yeah.
minutes, half hour. It went very quick.
I get people who come back and they say, oh my God, was that 5 minutes? I'm like, no, that was an hour. We did an hour of you breathing. Once you reach that point where that blood flow has been turned down on that prefrontal cortex, you lose time. Because, of course, time is just a construct of that part of the mind, right? It's an agreement we all have. We started at noontime. Is it really noontime? I don't know. What is it in Bangkok? It's all just an agreement. It's just this illusionary structure that we all agree to. And so when you enter this other reality, it doesn't include time. Time is not part of that. And that's where you have access to that subconscious mind, to those old vows, those old programs. Yeah.
And it brings up so much emotion too. Or for me,
that's what they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brought up a lot
right. Do you ever get into a confrontation?
It wasn't like sadness. It was, it was more of an awe feeling, like, wow.
Yeah. 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 There is that connection. You know, you get outside of this separation, right? Because we're trained to be separate human beings. We're told that we're, you know, you're Scottish, you're English, you're Protestant, you're Catholic, you're Jewish, you're this, you're that, you're American. We're given all of these identities that keep us separate. But once you get outside, and that's all resident here in the prefrontal cortex, once we get outside of that, and we get into the subconscious, we get to those base ones that culture and society have told us, and we can reset those. You're outside of that restriction. You're no longer that. I tell people all the time, it's like this, the work that we do, we have blinders on, you know, and that's what we've been told that we are. This is what reality is. And when we do these practices, we open those blinders, and all of a sudden we see that, wow, oh, it's not just this, it's this. What? Yeah. Incredible. Incredible. I love what I do.
I can tell. I love that you love what we do.
Oh my God. It's the best. I don't work. It's the greatest thing ever.
You've got the number one job.
I do.
Question for you. So for a woman who's in her 40s or 50s, who's stressed, maybe feeling depleted and skeptical, what would a first breathwork session look like, and what should she expect?
Wow. Boy, that is the question. What would a breathwork session look like? Well, it really depends. I find that women are much more able to drop in. They're much more, oh, hey, we had the guest star just a second ago.
Oh, yeah, the guest star. He's back.
Yeah, the guest star. Hey, what's happening? Oh, yeah. That's happiness right there.
That's the happy dog.
Yeah. So what can a woman expect? I find that women are much more adept at letting go and dropping in. God, yeah, I mean, you could come up with a number of reasons why, but they're always just able to do it, right? The guys will be there like, well, I don't know, maybe. No, I don't think I'm going to breathe, you know. No matter how much I cue, they're like, yeah, screw you, I'm not going to do it. And that's just their ego construct is so strong in what they have to be this, they're not able to let go. A woman is much more adept at saying, all right, I'll give it a roll. I'll give it a shot. Let's go. And so there's much more of a likelihood that someone will have an experience, because they're able to let go. It's really giving into the process. And the first 15 minutes of that hour, the first 15, 20 minutes feels like work. It feels like you breathe all day long. It's not work at all, right? You do it your whole life, not even a problem. As soon as you start to alter it and look at it and focus it, it becomes hard. But after 15 or 20 minutes, whoosh, you'll enter this place where time goes away and you could breathe forever. You don't even know you're breathing. As a matter of fact, sometimes I just don't even breathe and I'm there and I'm like, wherever I am. And then I realize that there's music going on, somebody cueing them. Oh, I'm breathing. Okay. And I'll go right back to breathing. And so what's the result? I had a woman in India. I did a speaking tour there in beginning of 2024, in like 2 months, 19 city speaking tour. And I did a breathwork session after the keynote. And I had a woman come up to me, and she was maybe late 40s. And she came up and she said, "Thank you so much. That was amazing." And she started to cry. And I have that happen a lot. She started to cry and she said, "You know, my dad died 2 years ago and my mom died a month ago. And I've been just so distraught, and I've missed my dad so much. And now my mom's not with me and I miss them so much. And I was just so stuck." She said, in the breath work, they came to me and they were smiling and happy and together. And they said, "Daughter, listen, you got to live your life. We're fine. Go on, live your life. Everything's great." And they floated away. And she said, "I feel so free right now. I feel so connected to them and free, because now I can go live my life. They've given me permission. They came and told me." These types of things happen often in these experiences, often. Yeah.
That's incredible.
It is.
It's incredible. Yeah. What would you say about breathwork? Do you think it's safe for everyone? Because you are going into
it. I think they're like anything, there's contraindications. Like, right? If someone's pregnant, you don't want to be doing this heavy breathwork style, because you're going to be changing the physiology of your blood, and you probably don't want to do that while you're carrying a little baby and you're building this human being within you. So you probably don't want to do that. I say, still be in the room, still be breathing. Just don't be doing the breathing that everybody else is doing. You'll still receive the benefit of all of that energetic shift. So it's good to be in the room and part of that. In somebody who has severe cardiac issues, I would say probably contraindicated. Somebody who just had surgery, again, it's all common sense stuff, right? If you've just had surgery, you don't want to be doing this vigorous breathing exercise and pop your stitches. Yeah. But I've done breath work and other modalities with people who have cardiac issues. It's just a matter of listening to your body and letting your body decide what works for you. Yeah. Because the breath is intuitive.
Well, it's safe, though. It's because you're in breath patterns, in the flow. It's all under your control.
I love breath work. It's one of the most powerful psychedelic modalities. And the best part, the reason that I think it's the most powerful, is that you get to control it. Like, when you use any of the other sacred medicines, you do any of this plant medicine, something like that, you take it. You're on for the ride. Like, you bought the ticket. You're on the ride. You're not getting off. Breath work, you can go into that deep experience, and then you can just let off on the breath, and the experience will dissipate. And then you could go back in if you wanted to. You're in control. You have your foot on the accelerator or not. So you get to. So I think that's why it's so beautiful.
You can get to that altered state with being able to come back whenever you want. Yeah. You're not
whatever you want
there for a period of time that you don't want to be there.
I have a
question for you too, Mark. Yeah. So my clients, they're moving their bodies every day in Pilates, right? Mm. But so how do you think like intentional breath work could maybe deepen a movement practice like that?
I think breath work, any of the breath work, you know, and having an intentional breath work practice coupled with any sort of movement is a beautiful way to regulate what's going on in your body, to ground you in the physical experience. And when you ground yourself in the body, in the physical experience, you're much more aware of what's going on in your body. And so you naturally will just be more in tune with what's going on and better able to participate in whatever it is that you're doing. Like, I still love high intensity interval training, and that's my thing, right? And I do breath work at the end. I have a breath work routine. The last thing I do after I've done my workout of the day and I've really stressed my body, I do a very grounding breath work practice, and it's just part of my routine. It's just as important as any of the exercises that I do. And when I get done, I am grounded into my body and much more able to physically see what's going on.
And feeling probably more, just more in control.
Yeah. More in control and really able to enter that place of rest and digest, enter that place of the parasympathetic. When you put a lot of stress on your body and you're doing all of these beautiful, wonderful physical routines and really energizing your body, you're putting stress on. So it's beautiful to be able to just immediately pull that back and let your body go into this beautiful rest and digest. And rest is one of the critical parts of any physical routine, whatever it is that you're, you know, connected to or you resonate with.
Yeah. So with, for Pilates, for example, so when we talk about sympathetic and parasympathetic state, and that sympathetic nervous system gets very activated during some of the exercises, especially strength-based Pilates and a lot of isometric holds and fatiguing the muscles as we go through. So it's tough. And you get into that sympathetic type of active, I guess, would you call activation?
Activated.
You're activated. And so I feel I like that word. We could learn these breath patterns, or if there was something that we could do or use more of in the practice to kind of settle that down and bring us back into that parasympathetic state.
Yeah.
If there's any sort of practice you could recommend or.
Oh, you know, it's really about, if you want to really regulate and enter that parasympathetic mode, it's about, it's the exhalation that is the key. So slowing the exhalation is the thing that will really have an impact on your state in the moment. So if you can exhale to an 8 count, that's beautiful. That's going to cue your body to go into that parasympathetic response.
So really focusing on the exhale.
Yeah. Slowing the exhale is going to really help you to bring that on. But I think any intentional breathing is going to be a big help, you know, because we always, whenever we're doing any of that, we're cueing people to continue to breathe. We're like, use your breath, continue to breathe, don't hold. And that's really, that's great advice, you know, moving
and
the
then
breath.
What about in breath work? Because we didn't really focus a lot of this on the session that I did, but is it more lateral, like the breathing technique? Is it belly breathing? Is it lateral breathing? What, is there any sort of cueing that goes?
You know, if you want to invoke like coherent, if you want coherence, in HeartMath Institute is an organization that's dedicated to coherence and creating a coherent state. And how they do that is in 5-second intervals. So it's a 5-second in, 5-second out, 5-second in, 5-second out. And they do that for 3 minutes and you'll enter a state of coherence, meaning all of your body systems will be in alignment. And when you do that before a meeting and everybody's in a coherent state, woo, man. But getting back to if you're working out, I'm sorry, what was the question again? I got into coherence and I love that. Yeah.
No, the type of breathing when I was asked about holotropic breath work in particular, but when we're in a Pilates movement, the type of breathing that we want to do, is it lateral breathing? Because there's the belly breathing, the lateral breathing. We tend to.
You know, I mean, in that case, I don't know what's instructed in Pilates. You know, I know in yoga, we did a lot of breathing where we would bring the belly button into the spine, right, and lock that lower part of the body. And then we would just breathe into the space in the upper body. So it was. So we were locked at the bottom. And so I think maybe that's the one that I would recommend in Pilates. I would say that there's a lot of overlap in sort of the holding of the, you know, whatever posture or whatever exercise you're in the middle of, whatever you're holding.
Let it go. Breathe out and let it go.
Breathe. Just breathe. It's so simple. Yeah.
So another question for you. What is so we're talking about the nervous system.
Yeah.
And going back to the nervous system, what does a dysregulated nervous system actually feel like day to day? So, how could you know?
I mean, most of us spend our time in a dysregulated nervous system just because of the world that we live in with the constant stream of media. And I think, a dysregulated, you're going to just feel on edge. Like you're going to feel that stress. And I think if you notice your breath, anytime you're anxious, what happens? Your breathing changes, right? And you find you just can't slow your breath down. It's because you're in a sympathetic nervous response. You have that anxious mind going on. So I think that what's it feel like? It feels like you're on edge. It feels like you're in a moment of just having to react. It's a reactionary feeling. Yeah. So, I mean, it's hard for me to say. It's been so long since I've been in that mode. But if I remember, it sucks. It's no fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wonder if there's ways that we can or just bring awareness around that, where feel that edge or you're on edge, just being able to check
it. I mean, you'll know when you're on edge. If you take a moment and just connect to yourself, which we're so distracted and we don't. If you take a moment to connect to yourself, you'll know immediately where you're at. You'll know you're in this heightened response state. And that's when you'll know to do breath work. And again, it's that slow exhalation. Or that one that I talked about in the beginning. That's, I think Huberman had someone on talking about breath work. And they said the studies show that this particular breath style was the best at invoking a vagal response. And it's... And the important part was that sip at the top. It expands the alveoli, which are the little microscopic sacs that where the transfers actually take place, the carbon dioxide and the oxygen. They found that one worked the best. So when you notice you're in that state,
right?
Breathe.
So what's the simplest breath work practice someone could do right now?
Oh my God. They're so easy. Like, there's that one. I tell people, and I got this from a breath work instructor in West Hollywood a number of years ago. And I was at her class and she said, I'm going to give you a gift. And it's called the 1 minute breath. And it's super simple. It's 20 seconds breathing in. It's 20 seconds holding your breath. And then it's 20 seconds exhaling. And let me tell you, that exhale at the end is the hard part because you're wanting to let go. But that is the key. The breathing in part's easy. The holding is easy. Slowing down that exhale for that 20 seconds at the end is the key. And it's the hardest part, but it's 1 minute. So if you're in it with somebody, you say, Hey, Kathy, give me a minute. Just step off. Into your breath. Like say, hey, just give me a minute. You go to the restroom, you do a 1 minute breath, you come back, you have shifted.
Yeah. I love that. It seems simple enough. Inhale for 20, hold for 20 seconds, and then exhale slowly for 20 seconds.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it's easy.
I haven't tried that one, but definitely would put that.
So easy. Give it a shot. What do you got to lose? A minute.
I'll be back in a minute.
Yeah. Give me a minute. All right.
I got to go take a breath.
I'll be back. Yeah, that's all you need. Just simple stuff like that. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a great tip. And I kind of want to move a little bit into a little bit about your background that I found quite fascinating. You've been initiated into the healing practice of the Quero people of the Andes.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating.
It is. And unexpected. And that's basically how my life rolls. Yeah. How my life rolls.
How your life rolls. And then
my life roll.
So you're in these healing practice of the Quero people of the Andes, but yet you also hold a master's degree in medical science. What are those two very different worlds actually agree on with the convergence of those two worlds?
I think that they agree that they work in different ways, that they're working on different domains. The Western medical tradition, the Western medicine, that they're the mechanics. They're working on the physicality of the human being. And, you know, if there's something physically wrong, you should go see the doctor. In the Caro world, they're working with the energetic body. They're working with the energy and working on removing energy that's been slowed down, that's a little bit more dense, is what we as humans pick up. Now, that can manifest as a physical response, and they can certainly work with that. But if there's something physically wrong, you should be going to the doctors for sure. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that they would agree that they're working in different domains, complementary. But I think Western medicine has started to maybe make a shift in understanding that it's just as important to work the energetic field, to work in the holistic manner with the person. Most of the Western medicine training is very laser focused and specific to certain things. And I think we've lost sort of that holistic view of the human being. So I think they're complementary, working different domains. And I think Western medicine is starting to recognize the importance of both.
Of bringing both together.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
Plant medicine and psychedelics are definitely showing up more and more in mainstream conversations.
Yeah, the president signed a declaration, man.
Right? So tell us, let's talk about that. More about what's going on.
Wow. It's, you know, first off, I talked about it earlier, you know, these things are illegal because of politics, not because of science. If we want a level set, 500,000 people a year die from tobacco, you know, 80,000-100,000 directly as a use of alcohol, both legal, both sold for, you know, billions of dollars. You get down the line, you get to psychedelics, zero people die per year of psychedelics. It's just so if you look at that as a level set, if you look at it from the, hey, this makes sense, you'll see that the legality part of this thing is skewed. And it's hard to get bureaucracies to move. So kudos to the president for doing something like that. It opens up healing for a lot of people. I come from that Western medical side, and I have a lot of knowledge of the psychopharmacology of what's going on with these medicines. But I'm also a practitioner from the side of the sacred medicine. It's sacred medicine, just like any of the other sacred tools, any of the religious tools that are out there that people hold sacred. For me, they're that. Yeah.
And so as someone with both a clinical and personal background, right?
Yeah.
And this, what would you say, what do you want people to understand before they go anywhere near this?
Yeah, before they go anywhere near, set and setting is always talked about. In other words, who you do it with and where you do it makes a difference. So if I'm going to sit with medicine, I don't do it by myself. I have someone who's experienced that I trust lead that in a very ceremonial fashion. For me, I think it's about, that's what creates the safety of the container, right? So having someone who's experienced, who's qualified, who you trust is key. Just doing these things at home, boy, anything can happen. Yeah.
Well, I guess the breath work we can safely do at home.
Absolutely.
But 1 minute check out, check in.
Listen, it was part of training and part of my, I believe in it. So I do it, of course. I'll do it here in bed, eye mask on, headphones, and I'm out. Maybe I'll do that this afternoon. Maybe when we get done, I'm going to go do a breath session because it's beautiful. It's a beautiful reset. And you can do it in the comfort of your own home. And it is legal. Nobody can stop you from breathing, then they go to jail.
Mark, are there any apps or resources that you would recommend that somebody who'd like to try a breathwork practice maybe in their
There are so many apps out there now. Breathwork's really coming into its own, and I love that. I love that. I think, you know, Othership, for sure. Othership, Othership, yeah. That is a great app for this, but almost all of the meditation apps now have a breathwork component, and I'm sure that you can find them on YouTube. For sure, if you look. Yeah.
And if somebody was interested in taking part in one of your breathwork sessions, yeah, how they get information about that?
Ah, they could.
Don't get a secret.
What's the best way to get a hold of me is probably LinkedIn, you know? Reach out on LinkedIn because it's pretty easy to look somebody up and you can find me there. And I'm on Instagram as the official Nurse Mark. But certainly, if you want to, you can reach out and always go to the websites. Thenewmysteries.org is one of the websites. A lot of different ways. If you're meant to find me, you're going to find me. You'll find me. Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah,
yeah.
There are no coincidences, which is why we're here, Kathy.
Right? I know. I was so excited when you agreed to do this podcast because I find your work fascinating.
Thank you.
I truly do. And
it's so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah. It's something that a lot of us didn't grow up understanding or knowing or even learning about childhood and what you're talking about up to the age of 7 or moving forward and ego and how that plays, a part in our lives as we.
Yeah. Could go down the rabbit hole as far as you wanted to go. Let me tell you, it gets as deep as you want to go. And it's like, yeah. Anyway, let's not even get on there. My God, we'll be here another hour. I love it.
I guess to wrap it up, if someone listening right now could walk away with just one shift, one new way of seeing their body or their health.
Yeah.
What do you want it to be?
That you're whole, complete, and perfect exactly as you are. So you don't have to do anything more. You can choose to, but you don't have to, because you're whole, complete, and perfect exactly as you are.
Thank you, Mark. I love it. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, everyone, for listening. That was Mark Worcester. I don't know about you, but I need a moment after that one. What stays with me is this. The body has been keeping score the whole time. Every survival script, every held breath, every moment we overrode what we actually were feeling and showing up as, it's still in there waiting, not necessarily to punish us, but to be heard. And the back door is simpler than we've been told. If today's conversation is something, if there's something in you, maybe a question or recognition or quiet, maybe that's me, don't rush past it. Sit with it. And that feeling is definitely information. And it might be the most important thing you take from this episode. So if you want to go deeper with Mark's work, you can certainly find him, as he mentioned, at nursemark.com and on Instagram at the official Nurse Mark. His community, Nurse Mark, and I think you mentioned you have another community.
It's called The New Mysteries. Yeah.
Okay. And The New Mystery, full of people who are done performing, who are complete and whole.
Yes.
And they're done performing their way through life and ready to actually live it. And if this episode moved you, please share it. Send it to the woman in your life who's doing everything right and still maybe feels like something is missing or not. That one share might be exactly what she needed today. And you can find me at kathycovington.com. And if you're local to Sarasota, Tampa, Lakewood Ranch, or Orange County, please come find us at a Mantra Pilates studio. The work we do here is exactly this, coming back to yourself from the inside out. So until next time, slow down, tune in, and your body knows the way. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Kathy.